Well, it's a great privilege to be here tonight, and we welcome you here as we deal again with another very timely and important topic. And we are following this week, as you know, Peter's admonition in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, where he says, as Christians, we are to be ready always to give to every person an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within us. And tonight we want to give answers for our faith, reasons why we believe what we believe, and learn how we, in a loving way, can share our faith with friends and neighbors who may be involved in Hinduism or Buddhism, the Eastern philosophies. Why are we dealing with this? We are dealing with this because, as you know, the Silicon Valley has certainly become a multicultural, pluralistic society where many people from India have come to work in high-tech jobs, and have brought with them their Hinduism, their Buddhism, and there's tremendous interest. And how do we share our faith? How do we relate to those who are involved in Hinduism and Buddhism? We are witnessing, and you need to be aware of this, we are witnessing in Western society today a major paradigm shift in Western culture towards the acceptance of an Eastern Hindu pantheistic worldview. It began back in the 1970s when we had Maharishi Mahesh Yogi promoting transcendental meditation, and that became so popular with the Beatles who went to India. And then we had, I'll never forget, on the Merv Griffin show in 1975, the Nelson Rating said it was number one watch program that year when Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was on Merv Griffin, and the first person to come walking out that night, I'll never forget, was Clint Eastwood. And Clint Eastwood came and he brought flowers and he bowed down at the feet of Maharishi. The next person to come walking out that night was Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds came and brought flowers and bowed down at the feet of Maharishi. The next person to come walking out that night was Mary Tyler Moore. And she came and bowed down at the feet of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, all claiming that they were trying to find peace and fulfillment through transcendental Hindu meditation. We then saw in the 1980s the explosion of the New Age philosophy and the New Age movement. People like Shirley MacLaine and others promoting the New Age, which was an adoption of Eastern Hinduism, yoga, meditation, seeking to move away from a Western worldview based on a Christian heritage and accepting of a pantheistic Hindu worldview, as we'll examine. We saw it coming in the 90s with people's tremendous interest today in yoga and in all forms of Eastern meditation, with the promotion of many Hindu authors like Deepak Chopra and others that you often see on Larry King and Oprah, promoting Hinduism and what they perceive as a mainstream way to attract Americans into a Hindu-Buddhist philosophy. And that's why we need to examine this very important issue, especially here in the Silicon Valley. There are probably close to a billion Hindus, somewhere between 800 million and 1,000 million Hindus in the world. In India, where you have 83% of the population are Hindu, and many, I said, have immigrated to the United States, and that's why this is so important. Well, tonight, what I want to do is just quickly give you an overview of what Hinduism is, as well as Buddhism, because Buddha was a Hindu. Buddha never intended to start a new religion. He was a Hindu born in India who sought to reform Hinduism, as we're going to see, and they are very similar in their thinking. Also, the idea of yoga and reincarnation, and what are these, and how do we relate to them? I have been to India on many occasions, and have spoken throughout India and Nepal, the two main Hindu countries. I've also spoken in most of the Buddhist countries, from Sri Lanka, been spoken throughout Burma on two different occasions, in Thailand, in China and Korea and Japan, as well as Thailand and Cambodia, and have seen both Hinduism and Buddhism firsthand. I also happen to have had a strange major in college. When I was growing up in the Bay Area here, I went to the University of California in Cal State Hayward, and Cal State Hayward majored in the early 70s in Indian philosophy, which Indian philosophy is what is known as Hinduism. And back in the 70s, people wondered, why are you majoring in Indian philosophy? And then the whole New Age movement exploded upon us, the shift in Western culture, and I see now how the Lord had prepared me in a unique way to study under some of the leading Hindu gurus and Buddhist teachers here in our universities. And so you're going to find this very interesting. Just to give you a little background, Hinduism, also known as Indian philosophy, has sacred scriptures known as the Vedas. And it's very interesting, if you study the Vedic scriptures of Hinduism, they are in four parts, beginning with the Rig Veda, going down to the Upanishads. And it's interesting that in the earliest Vedic scriptures, you find the concept of a one supreme creator God, monotheism. And then as you go down through the Vedic scriptures, you find it degenerate down into polytheism, the worship of many gods, down into henotheism, the idea of tribal deities, you have a god, I have a god, into the end of the Vedic scriptures, which are the Upanishads, where you find this concept today of monism, of pantheism, that all is one, all is God, and God is impersonal. And we're going to look at that concept today. When you study Hinduism, there are six schools of Indian philosophy: Naya, Vaisheshika, Sankhya, Yoga, Mimamsa, and Vedanta. The two major schools of Hinduism that we see today in America are the schools of Vedanta and Yoga. Vedanta philosophy is a Sanskrit word, Sanskrit that the Vedas were written in. Vedanta, Vedas, and Anta means end of. At the end of the Vedas refers to the Upanishads, which are the end of the Vedic scriptures. And here is where you find this monistic concept of pantheism we talk about today. What is at the very heart of Indian philosophy? There are three things that form the basis of Hinduism today, known as Vedanta philosophy. It is, first of all, the concept of spiritual monism. As I talked about Sunday morning, spiritual monism says that all is one, and it is the Siamese twin of pantheism, which says not only is all one, but all is God and God is impersonal. As I said the Sunday morning, it's very interesting if all is one and all is God, and God is impersonal. If the sky is God, the clouds are God, the trees are God, the dirt is God, you're God, I'm God, everything is God, and God is impersonal. If the dirt is God and you are God, you know, what do you become equal with? And as we're going to see, this has been one of the problems in India, that Hinduism has never raised the level of nature to the level of men and women. But it always ends up devaluing men and women to the level of nature. You also have the idea of karma. Karma in both Hinduism and Buddhism, which are one's deeds in this life will determine how you cycle back, because they believe in a cyclic history that man must save himself through cyclic rebirth over and over through reincarnation, transmigration, based upon the law of karma, the law of cause and effect, that how you live now, the deeds that you do now, will determine how you cycle back in the next life. And this karma, as we're going to see, holds people enslaved to the religion of Hinduism. Also, the idea of transmigration, known in the West as reincarnation. These things are three central things that we find both in Hinduism and Buddhism.